New Orleans. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. There's only one degree of separation between drummer Herlin Riley and nearly every great song to come out of New Orleans in the past century. His family is just that big. Riley has spent most of his career on the world stage, playing with the likes of Ahmad Jamal, Wynton Marsalis, and the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra. And as a composer and bandleader, Riley has produced 3 critically acclaimed albums. But as a newlywed, Riley's wife thought he might do even better working at the local supermarket.
She said to me, "You know, Herlin, you know, this music thing is okay, but I was reading in the paper this morning that they're hiring at Schwagman's."
Paper or plastic, Herlin Riley answers to a different drum after the break. Don't let the last name fool you. Herlin Riley hails from the Lasty family, the first family of New Orleans drummers, dating back to the turn of the last century. And he's carried the tradition all over the world, with jazz master Ahmad Jamal and Wynton Marsalis, including more than a decade with the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra. Riley played on the orchestra's 1997 Blood on the Fields album, which won the Pulitzer Prize. Riley also has released 3 albums as band leader. His latest is New Direction, a lush body of songs that features Afro-Cuban rhythms. That is not where Riley started. He began his professional life playing traditional jazz on trumpet. Then, there were also the years when Riley played strip clubs in the French Quarter, which is not as easy as it looks. He's a modern jazz player with a life story that could make a best-selling book, but he's much more fun to listen to. Herlin Riley joins us here at Marigny Recording Studio. Thanks for coming out.
Thank you, Gwen. Thank you so much for asking me to be here and be a part of this interview.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. Now, you know, when I said earlier that you are a member of the Lasty family, the first family of drummers in New Orleans, you kind of grimaced. Now, do you not believe that? Are the Lasties not the first family of drumming in New Orleans?
Well, my grandfather, Frank Lasty, he was a drummer, and he was born in 1902. He did play with Louis Armstrong in 1913 in Wave's home.
Okay, we need to repeat that. Your grandfather, Frank Lasty,
yes,
played with Louis Armstrong at the Colored Wave's home.
At the Colored Wave's home in 1913.
Okay, now this is not what I would consider the gold standard of New Orleans music. This is like the platinum standard of New Orleans music. I mean, who have we met who's related to anybody who played with Louis Armstrong?
No one alive. I can't think of anyone alive who played with Louis Armstrong.
Now, let's count up. How many of your family members are drummers then, or were drummers? So
well,
that's your grandfather.
My grandfather, Frank.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle, Walter,
uncle
who is called him Papi, who played with Fats Domino. And I have my cousin, Joe Lasty. He works now with the Preservation Hall Band.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're the most, I would say, the most prominent ones.
All right, then. But in terms of families who over generations have made a contribution to the drum as an art form in New Orleans music, you know, are there any other rivals to the Lasty family?
Well, the Barberans, Louis,
oh, yes.
Louis Barberan and Paul Barberan, you know, they were also born, you know, around the turn of the century, 1900 or so.
And, of course, Paul Barberan played with Armstrong.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And wrote Second Line, Second Line of Song of New Orleans.
Yes, and he wrote Bourbon Street Parade,
yes,
as well.
Thank you.
So the Barbarians were in there. They were, you know, they were in there.
Oh yeah, you're right now. Okay, now you're chipping away at the Lasty legacy here. But in terms of your grandfather, Frank Lasty, first of all, how did he end up at the Colored Waifs home? I mean, we know the Armstrong story, right? Shooting the gun as a child on New Year's Eve or something for a New Year's celebration. And so what was your grandfather doing that landed him such a tough spot?
He told me that he got into an altercation with a guy, and he was 11 years old at the time. He was born in 1902. So he said that he hit some guy in the mouth with a brick.
Ooh, harsh.
And so, you know, he had to be put away. They put him away for a minute. And that's when he met Mr. Davis and Louis Armstrong and, you know, those guys. So that's, you know, of course I wasn't around, but that's the story that he told me.
Wow. That's pretty exciting, though. I mean, obviously not when you're going through it.
No.
When you're sitting in a waif's home, and I don't care, you know, who you are. You look at Louis Armstrong, he's just a baby, essentially. And so you don't know what the future's going to hold.
Yeah. Well, you know, with anyone, when your freedom is taken away from you, that can be a devastating thing for anyone, you know.
Much less a child.
Much less a child. Anyone who's incarcerated and comes out and changed their lives and, you know, and does well, I applaud them.
You're absolutely right. And so when he came out, my understanding is that he ultimately became a church drummer. But
yes.
Did he play professionally?
He never played professionally. He only played in church. And he was like one of the first people to actually introduce the drum set to the church. And the church that, you know, basically he played in was a church called the Guiding Star Spiritual Church. And
where was that?
That was located in the Lower Ninth Ward on the corner of Benton and Durban Street, which is no longer there because Hurricane Katrina, of course, washed it all away. But that's where the church was. And that's the church I grew up in also as a little boy.
Really?
And that's where I learned to play the drums. And, you know, in the church, that was the first place I got to perform and to play in front of people.
I read recently a quote of yours in which you were quoting your grandfather, right? Mm-hmm. And you quoted him as saying, "Everything in life is governed by rhythm. And the drummer's responsibility is to keep good time."
Exactly. Yes, he did say that. He did say that to me. Everything in life is governed by rhythm. You know, everything, you know, the sun comes up and goes down to a rhythm. You know, the waves washes up to the shore to a rhythm. There's a rhythm in there. You know, there's a rhythm with people trying to get pregnant, you know, maternity kind of thing. It's a rhythm. And so just that when you play the drums, the rhythms are quicker. Yes.
I suppose that's true.
Yes.
Okay, so when you think about your childhood in the Lower Ninth Ward and seeing your grandfather, is there a particular rhythm that comes to mind or that you feel, you know what I mean, was there a rhythm to life that you might be able to demonstrate for us?
Well, you know, growing up, there was all sorts of rhythms that I heard. You know, rhythms from my grandfather playing the drums, rhythms from ladies who played the tambourine. I can remember my aunts, you know, singing around the house. They would sing songs and clap their hands to a certain rhythm. I had an Uncle Willie, he, my grandmother's brother, he would make up all these kinds of songs and stuff and sing to us, like stuff that he would just make up. "You're bound to look like a monkey when you get old. Oh, yes, you're bound to look like a monkey when you get old. I can tell by your knees, you've been climbing them coconut trees. You're bound to look like a monkey when you get old." You know, that's the kind of stuff he was saying to us as children, you know.
Yeah.
And we would just laugh. It was a lot of songs like that. He would just make up all kinds of songs and just sing them to us. And clap his hand, and we'd all kind of join in and clap and have a good... You know, it was a party at the house without any instruments or, you know, or any televisions or any radio or anything. So it was just a wonderful, wonderful, happy experience to be a child and, you know, to just be attached to humanity.
Now, did you grow up with your parents or your grandparents?
I grew up primarily with my grandparents, and which I'm, you know, I'm very, very grateful for, having the wisdom and the hands-on of older people, you know, in my life. My mother was there, you know, but... my grandparents were the ones who really, really kind of nurtured me. And it was a time when my mother remarried. And so I would go and spend nights with my mother and that kind of thing. But my primary home was my grandparents.
And what did your grandparents do for a living? I mean, did your grandfather work outside the home?
Well, yeah, yes. Yeah, my grandmother did not work.
Okay, outside the home, she did not work.
Outside the home, but she was very domestic. Of course, you know, the cooking and cleaning and, you know, all those things that you do to keep a home together. She did that. But my grandfather worked for a long time at the, there was a slaughterhouse right here in the Lower Ninth Ward. And he worked at the slaughterhouse for, I don't know, 40 years or something like that. And then he was also involved, my grandfather, Frank Lassie, was involved with the OPPVL.
What is that?
Orleans Parish Progressive Voters League, which was it was a political organization that...
That promoted voters'
Voters' rights and promoted people to go out and register to vote, because this is in the 60s, right after the Voting Rights Act was passed. So my grandfather was very active in a political scene, as well as being active in the church.
Yeah, so he was a really sort of high-profile community man.
Oh, absolutely. And most of the people in the Lower Ninth Ward knew who he was and, you know, had his phone number and knew to call him.
Exactly. I know you talked about the family making up songs, you know, at home and all. But when you think back on those years, is there any particular song that comes to mind that make you think of that time? Like when you hear them on the radio or when you hear somebody playing or singing them, you think that brings me back to the Lower Nine?
Well, of course, when I hear Oop-Oop-A-Doo, that song brings me right back to Lower Nine.
Why?
Because first of all, it was a song that was performed by my uncle.
Jesse Hill is your uncle?
Jesse Hill is my grandmother's baby brother. Stop trying till I create a disturbance in your mind.
Now, what a pickup line is that, huh? Won't stop trying till I create a disturbance in your mind. I'd give that guy my phone number.
Yeah. That's a great line.
It really is.
The whole family loved that song because it was a relative who did it. And my Uncle David was also, he played the saxophone on the song, which was my mother's brother.
David Lastie?
Yes, yes. Yes, David Lastie. I wanted to play the saxophone like him because of that song. When I hear it today, that song kind of brings back a lot of things for me, you know. So, yeah, if we had to pick one tune, that would be the tune.
Now, you began as a trumpet player, yeah, right? And so can you still blow?
Yeah, I can still play the trumpet. Not very long anymore because, you know, the trumpet is such an instrument that you have to practice it and you have to keep your chops up. You know, as Louis Armstrong would say, you got to keep your chops up. Keep the muscles around the embouchure built and so that you can sustain and play for a long time. So I can still play a little bit.
What drew you to the trumpet?
My Uncle Melvin Lastie drew me to the trumpet because he was my most influential mentor that I ever had. And as a baby, as an infant, my Uncle Melvin, he played to me in my crib with a muted trumpet. And as I got older, there was a hit that was co-written by my Uncle Melvin. It was called I Know. was sung by a woman named Barbara George. And my Uncle Melvin played this cornet solo for that particular piece.
Yeah.
And so I would kind of beg my Uncle Melvin, please send me a trumpet. Please give me a trumpet. And then he actually sent me a trumpet when I was 12 years old.
This. I mean, what kind of role did family connections play in your career, in your evolution as a musician? How much has all of this done for you?
Well, the fact is, it showed me at a very early age that I could make a living playing music. And I saw my uncles working, and they showed me the possibilities. You know, when I first got married to my wife, and, you know, I married a long time ago.
Patricia.
I married to my wife, Patricia, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
how old were you when you got married?
I was 18.
Whoa!
I was 18 years old when I married. I'm still married to the same woman.
True love.
We've been married for 40, it'll be 41 years this year. And early on in our marriage, I was playing music. I was working on Bourbon Street, you know. And then there was a time whereby music kind of slowed up for me. And she said to me, you know, Herlin, you know, this music thing is okay, but, you know, I was reading in the paper this morning that they're hiring at Schwagman's.
At the grocery store.
Schwagman's is a grocery store. And it was a big supermarket, actually. And she said that they're hiring at Schwagman's. They're looking for someone to come and manage the produce section. Perhaps you should go down there and apply for the job. And I was very confident with my music, and I was very sure about what I wanted to do. And I said, I'm going to stick with this music. And if it, you know, if the music thing doesn't work out for me, then I'll think about going out and apply for another job. But fortunately, you know, it has worked out. And because I had the confidence, and because I had people before me that did music, you know, full time, I knew the possibilities. And I felt like I was talented enough to sustain and that, you know, that it would work out. And fortunately, it did.
Herlin Reilly with Watch What You're Doing. Schwagman's Giant Supermarkets closed in 1999, but Herlin Reilly made the leap to the world stage. Coming up, what used to happen on Bourbon Street when the strippers were on break. Stay with us. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Herlin Reilly has taught jazz drumming at Juilliard and at music workshops all over the world. But he never studied the drums formally. Reilly spent his early years playing trumpet with Danny Barker and Charles Barbaran, who led the Fairview Baptist Church Christian Marching Band. That little troupe made a mighty impression on jazz and extended the New Orleans music tradition into the 21st century. Reilly still remembers Barker's advice that every music solo should tell a story.
I'll start with a little motif.
Okay.
And then I'll kind of embellish it. I don't know what I'm going to do right now. I'm just sitting here and I'm looking at the drum set. I don't know what I'm going to do. But it is like you have to tell a story, and it's like a sermon. It's like a sermon. Like when a preacher is preaching, he gets a theme of what he's going to talk about. And then he'll start to embellish the theme and expound on the theme that he's going to say. So I'm going to figure out some kind of little theme here on the drum set, and I'll give you a little demonstration of this.
Okay, thank you, Herlin Reilly. All right.
So here we go. Go ahead, give me a rhythm. Just give me something. Just give me anything. Tell me something.
like I saw a whole like parade of dignitaries going by, you know?
Great.
That's amazing. It's amazing how visual a rhythm can be.
Yes, it can be. It told you a little story right quick.
It sure did. Now, you've said that an undercurrent of dialogue between the bass drum and the snare drum is happening at all times, right? All the time.
Well, I would say that with most music that's groove-oriented as opposed to swing-oriented. When we think about swing music, the constant in swing music is the cymbal. That's where the foundation of the swing rhythms lie. It's in the cymbal. If I'm playing other styles of music, it's always the dialogue between the snare drum and the bass drum.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I can just kind of demonstrate for you.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. And let me ask you, as you're getting yourself comfortable, though, is swing always in 4/4, or is it in another beat structure?
You can swing in different meters. This is the 4/4 swing. Okay, that's 4/4. This is 5/4. 1, 2, 4, 5. 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's still swinging. 4, 5, 1, 2. So that's, you know, and I can go on and on and on. But
can it go slower? How slow can you swing? What's the
as
slowest?
As slow as you want to swing.
Really?
All right, this is fast. You know, you can swing it fast, slow, medium, however you want it. But
okay,
the concept is still the same. It's, the cymbal is actually carries the swing.
Okay.
When you deal with other styles, as I said earlier, that the interaction of the bass drum and the snare drum will kind of identify the style. So
okay,
this is New Orleans street beat. That's New Orleans street beat.
It really is. I mean, it's like if you were in a group of people at a restaurant, in school, whatever, you're sitting there and you hear that beat, every ear cocks.
Every ear
like,
pops
uh-oh,
up. That's right.
Uh-oh.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So New Orleans music has that kind of power and that kind of richness to it that really makes people want to dance, make you want to dance and move. You know, sometimes you just can't help yourself. You just, you know, just the rhythm gets you.
Yeah. I love that. Harlan Riley, tell us about working on Bourbon Street. Now, by the time you got to Bourbon Street, you had switched to drum, right, from trumpet.
Yes. When I worked on Bourbon Street, Uncle David Lasty was playing with Clarence Frogman Henry at a club called the La Strada Club.
Ah.
So there was a club called the 500 Club, which was a burlesque club across the street from the La Strada. It was owned by the same people. So my Uncle David said, hey, Harlan, you think you can play trumpet? So I started playing 7 nights a week. That was 7 nights a week. So eventually they found out I could play the drums. So I started subbing on the drums one night. Then I would sub on the trumpet.
And you know, how big is the repertoire for a stripping act?
Each act had their own 2 or 3 tunes that they would play every night.
And how many shows a night?
During this time, it was 6 hours a night. We would start at 8:45. We'd finish at 2:45.
Come on.
Yes. 6 hours a night. 6 hours a night.
Playing the same songs.
Playing the same show. And what happened, eventually, both the guy who played the trombone and the guy who played the drums, they both left the band at the same time.
Oh, okay.
And so I moved into the drum chair because I knew the routine. And then it just so happened that a friend of mine, Wendell Brunis.
Oh, wow, the trumpet player.
The trumpet player, Wendell Brunis, was working at Sears and Roebuck in the sporting goods section of Sears and Roebuck at the time. So I happened to go down there one day, and I said, man, you should come down here to the 500 Club and audition. So Wendell got the gig, and that was his last day gig was at Sears. So after that, he only played music, you know, and
terrific.
That's been 40 years or so now.
You're naming some fantastic musicians who were playing on Bourbon at that time. David Lasty was playing. Toots Washington, you played with.
I played with him.
The great piano player.
At the 500 Club. Toots Washington.
Wow, who was an inspiration to Professor Longhair,
right?
Then you're talking about Wendell Brunius, who, of course, comes from yet another clan, the Brunius clan of New Orleans, which is, really distinguished itself in the horns, and all. And so, but did anybody, and I mean anybody, come down to Bourbon Street to hear the music?
No. No. I mean, people came down to Bourbon Street to see the women take off their clothes. And well, I guess people came to hear Frogman here. Yes, they would come down and check him out. And then also there was the great band with George French and Ellis Marcellus and Ernie Ellie.
John
Brunius and Don Sewer and Freddie Lonzo. They played at a club called Crazy Shirley's. That band was a great, great band. Wendell and I would, on our break, we would run down two blocks. We only had 15 minutes off and then come back because that band, they could play straight ahead Miles stuff. They could play traditional music. They could play Latin music. They were playing all kinds of different styles.
But how did you get from Bourbon Street to Ahmad Jamal?
During this time, I was getting more and more calls for drums and less calls for the trumpet. So I started playing a show called One More Time.
Oh, yes, the Vernell Bagnera Show. The
Vernell Bagnera Show. I did One More Time, and we went to London, and I stayed there for 6 months doing that show. And
that was all period music.
1920s.
Nice.
All 1920s music. And following doing that show, I happened to be back in New Orleans, and Ahmad Jamal had came to the Fairmont Hotel.
Oh, when they had that blues.
When they had the Blue Room.
The Blue Room,
the Blue
that's
room.
It.
And this was a place where a lot of the national acts would come to New Orleans and play. And during that time, they had an orchestra that backed up, all the bands.
Mm.
So one of the guys in the orchestra, his name was Emery Thompson. And his Muslim name is Umar Sharif. And he and Ahmad Jamal were good, good friends. And so I got a phone call about 7:30 in the morning. He said, his exact words was, Ahmad Jamal needs you.
Ooh.
I said, what do you mean Ahmad Jamal needs me? He said, yeah, man, he needs another drummer. His drummer is leaving. So I said, man, come on, man. It's 7:30 in the morning. I don't want to play like that on the phone. It's too early to clown, man. I don't want to see. He said, no, man, I'm serious. And then about 15 minutes later, Ahmad Jamal called me on the phone. And he said, Mr. Riley? I said, yes, sir. Yes, sir. He said, this is Ahmad Jamal calling. I understand that you're a fine drummer. Would you like to come, could you work with me? I said, sure. He said, well, can you fly out to Phoenix, Arizona today?
Today?
Today? Today? I was, it's 7:30 in the morning, man. I said, of course it's Ahmad Jamal. So I was like, yeah, I can do it. So I got subs to work my gigs. And I flew to Phoenix, Arizona, and then that night I played with him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Herlin Riley. That is an amazing story. That's like out of like a Hollywood story or something. First of all, the most perfect sentence in the world, Ahmad Jamal needs you.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what he said to me, Ahmad Jamal needs you. And during that time, you could just jump on a plane.
Yeah.
No TSA, none of that kind of stuff. After that night, I stayed 5 years with him from 1982 to 87.
Incredible. It's funny. I always, Ahmad Jamal is a, he's a legend in modern jazz.
Yes,
I mean, he really is. But I always think of him as a kid, because I think about him from that CBS television show back from 1957, Sound of Jazz.
Oh,
did you ever see that?
No, I never saw
it. It's a fantastic. It's that show, remember, that had Billie Holiday and Lester Young
for
the last time together, right? Well, part of that hour was Ahmad Jamal playing piano in front of like Count Basie and Ben Webster and all these amazing veterans,
you know?
And he was like a kid.
Yes, he was, yes.
I don't care how old Ahmad Jamal gets, he is still going to be that little kid to me. But this is a guy who did a lot of minimalist, cool jazz.
Well, Well, he influenced so many people, including Miles Davis.
That's right.
You know, and I still work with him now.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So he's kind of semi-retired now. He's 86 years old.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I don't know a whole lot about Ahmad Jamal's personnel, but it seems as if he has had two New Orleans drummers working with him. You were preceded by Vernell Fournier, right?
Vernell Fournier, yes.
Who was part of the great Ahmad Jamal trio, you know, that made news back in the 50s and, I guess, early 60s.
Early 60s, yeah. But also I want to mention Idris Muhammad also played with Ahmad.
Really?
Yeah.
So three New Orleans drummers.
Yes.
Idris Muhammad, Vernell Fournier, and Herlin Riley.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, he's got good taste.
Yeah. Poinciana, that was Ahmad Jamal's big hit, which was a tune that was recorded live at a club called The Persian in Chicago. And Vernell Fournier was the person that played on that song. And a particular song has a New Orleans kind of second line groove that's been kind of modified for the drum set.
What he's doing?
Okay, yes, okay. I can show you. When we do the New Orleans Street Parade beat, we play like this. Okay.
Okay.
And what Vernell did. Did he switch to the cymbal? That's part of what made this tune a hit. It was the groove that was underneath. And Ahmad played all this stuff on top, of course. But, you know, all music starts with rhythm.
Should mention that it was Israel Crosby, right, on bass.
Israel Crosby on bass.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, how has Ahmad Jamal changed that you can tell?
The fact is, Jamal, he's playing like he's 40 years old.
Wow.
For a man 86 years old, he can still play fast, he can play slow, he can play in a way that makes you cry, he can play in a way that makes you laugh. He's just pouring out himself through his piano.
That's the great Ahmad Jamal, this time with our guest, Herlin Riley, on drums, playing Poinciana live at the Olympia in Paris in 2012. Coming up, after years as a sideman, Riley lets his light shine. Stay with us. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. We're talking with drummer Herlin Riley. After touring and recording with Ahmad Jamal in the 1980s, Riley got the call to join Wynton Marsalis.
We'll be right back.
their septet expanded into the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra. Riley calls the time with Marsalis the most educational period of his musical life. But first, he had to step out of the giant shadow of his predecessor, the Grammy-winning drummer, Jeff Tane Watts.
Eventually, as time went on, I became more and more myself, became more and more putting Herlin Riley into the drum set. And when I started to do that, things in the band started to click.
And you're bringing tambourine, right? You're bringing cowbells. You're bringing all kinds of accoutrement that, that's all geared toward interesting percussive layers and textures, right?
Absolutely. And that was the thing that he encouraged me. He said, man, bring everything you got. The washboard. I had a gong at one time. I had all these kind of clackers. I had all kind of percussion stuff, you know, that kind of embellished the music and kind of accented certain parts of the music. And then as time went on, he started writing stuff for me that featured me on the tambourine. And now the tambourine has become a part of most guys' drum sets now. A lot of the modern drummers now are playing the tambourine. And so I'm very flattered that it's been one of the things that I've kind of brought to jazz music for today.
Your first album is called Watch What You're Doing, which is such a perfect admonition. Watch what you're doing.
I heard that all my life.
My whole life, exactly. But this is your first outing as a band leader.
Yes.
You know, at least in terms of recording. Mm-hmm. And your personnel was described as sort of an elite unit of the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra, right? Which, you know, sounds like a SWAT team or Navy SEALs or something.
Yes. During this time, I was in the orchestra. And so the musicians who were in the orchestra with me at the time, you know, were very accessible. And so Rodney Whitaker, the bass player, is with me.
Right. Wycliffe Gordon.
Wycliffe Gordon.
On trombone.
Trombone.
Ryan Kaiser.
Ryan Kaiser on trumpet.
Victor Goins.
Victor Goins.
You know, from New Orleans.
Yes.
Right, on sax.
On sax.
And clarinet. And then Fareed Baron.
Fareed Baron, who's from Philadelphia. And it was a natural thing to go ahead and record with those people as opposed to trying to find other people. I couldn't find any musicians any better than them.
Well, you know, one of the songs is New York Walk.
Walking down the streets in New York, there's always something unexpected that happens. The sirens never stop in New York. And so in my song, there's a 3/4 bar New York walk that signifies this unexpected thing that's going to happen. So everything is 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. You know, it's like that.
Harlan Riley, how did you know it was time for you to make a CD, your first CD?
Well, it was something I had been toying with for a long time and trying to figure out how to do it. And then I started writing music. And after I wrote all this music, I was like, what do I do with it? You know, and a lot of musicians who were younger than I was, who were recording and making these statements, and I'm like, I need to make my own statement. I need to do a recording. And so when opportunity presented itself to record, I didn't want to record cover songs. I wanted to record my music. When was that? Was that 1999?
It was 99.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that, you know, as an artist, that's important that you present your own sound. You know, I look at myself, I'm a musician, but I'm also an artist. As an artist, you know, you have to create something from scratch. You know, create it from the ground up and just make it happen.
In 2005, you had another thing to say when you released Cream of the Crescent,
mm-hmm.
which is your second album.
Yes.
This is a curious album because, again, you drew your personnel from the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra, right? Mm-hmm. Wynton Marsalis, who leads the orchestra, he is your trumpet player.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you've got Wynton Marsalis, you've got Wycliffe Gordon again.
Yes.
Right, on
yes.
trombone. You've got Victor Goines again
yes.
on sax, Reginald Veal on bass, and then Eric Lewis on piano, right?
Yes.
But, you know, but in this scenario, you're moving from sideman in the orchestra to band leader, right?
Yes.
You know, Wynton Marsalis is a, you know what I mean, is a fine band leader. I don't get the impression that he listens as much as he talks.
Well, I can see why you would get that impression.
So how do you kind of assume control?
Well, the fact is, you know, Wynton, he does listen. And one of the things I always talk about when I do master classes, that in order to be great, you have to have two things working that has to balance for you at the same time. And that is your confidence and your humility. And it has to be that balance, because too much confidence becomes ego.
Yes.
And too much humility becomes like low self-esteem.
Right.
You know.
Ineffective.
Ineffective, right. So Winston's humility allows him to listen to someone who has something to say. You know, he heard me as a composer. He stepped back and allowed me to conduct my own thing.
That sounds good. And you know, and sometimes for people who end up having to make 16 million decisions in a day, you know what I mean, because they have a leadership job, mm-hmm. they appreciate the moment when they don't have to make all the decisions.
Exactly. And he told me that too, man. I'm just glad. I just want to come in here and just play this music, man. I don't have to think about, you know, I don't have to worry about anything else, but just play the music. And yeah, he did say that too.
Yeah. Represented sort of like a swan song for you also, in the sense that you were leaving the jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra around this time. Is that right?
Yeah. I think Cream of the Crescent probably came out in the early part of 2005. I left the band in June of 2005.
Why?
It was time. It was time to go. I did 17 years. And one of the things Wynton said to me, you know, he said, man, you know, your light is too bright to be stuck in behind a big band. your light is too bright.
Out this beautiful album in 2016 called New Direction, which is a new direction for you in many ways because this work embraces what, you know, Jelly Roll Morton called the Latin tinge, you know, in New Orleans music. It's not a New Orleans music album, but it captures New Orleans as the northernmost capital of the Caribbean.
Well, New Direction, the title, comes from this particular time in my life now. You know, I wrote 7 of the 10 pieces on the CD, and I had wonderful musicians to execute my vision and to execute what I was hearing in my writing. You know, so it's like I bake the cake, and you tell me how it tastes.
I just love the song that you do called Spring Fantasy. This song is dreamy.
All right. Well, that's one of my favorite tunes on the record as well, Spring Fantasy. I really like that song.
Sexiest song that you've got on this album, maybe the sexiest song you've done, is Shake the Dust.
Yes.
What the heck was going on there? I love the way it starts.
Ooh. Yeah, Shake Off the Dust. It's a song that really makes you want to relax. It's a relaxing kind of song. At the end of the day, you can come back and put your feet up and, you know, and have a glass of wine or, you know, and just relax with a loved one or, you know, whatever.
With your honey.
With your honey, you know. And, you know, take all the cares and all the worries and put them outside the door for that moment. My whole New Direction vision is modeled after Art Blakey.
Oh.
It's modeled after him. And now, you know, being an elder statesman in music, I want to influence and to kind of propel some younger musicians.
And so Art Blakey, who was one of the original Jazz Messengers, is that right? Yes, he, of course, was a great drummer who would bring young people to play with him, including Branford and Wynton Marsalis.
Yes.
Terrence Blanchard. Donald Harrison.
Donald Harrison.
That's right.
Lee Morgan.
Lee Morgan, the sidewinder.
Yes.
But Terrence Blanchard told us that Blakey would tell his young artists, when you leave this band, you should go and lead a band. You know, I'm training you to lead.
Yes.
Not to be sidemen.
Yes. Yes.
Is that what you're telling your fellas?
Well, absolutely. I think the best leaders are the people who were sidemen, who came up through the ranks and then, you know, evolved into leadership.
Yes.
You know.
They know what works.
Yes.
Well, Herlin Reilly, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. You have been fantastic.
Thank you so much for having me, Gwen. I really, really appreciate being here. Thank you so much.
Herlin Reilly's latest album is called New Direction and features Bruce Harris on trumpet, Godwin Lewis on sax, Emmett Cohen on piano, Russell Hall on bass, and Pedrito Martinez on percussion. You've been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Garrett Pittman, and Jason Rhine. Music Inside Out is produced in partnership with WWNO. For a complete playlist of the songs in this hour, go to our website at musicinsideout.org. And don't forget to like our page on Facebook. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Music Inside Out also receives support from the Fertel Foundation, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, Baba Jim Istanbul Studios and Mastering, Adam Newman Designs, and WWNO. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax deductible, thanks to our partnership with the National Performance Network. For more information on how you can support our program, please go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.